to the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is that plumber slash doctor slash adventurer slash safari guy slash painter slash, oh, he's done a million things, Kyle Krause.
Maybe. Am I the Mario in this situation? I was the Luigi. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm the Waluigi and you're the Wario. I'm not sure.
I will take that. I will definitely take that.
Yes.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
I am exhausted.
Are you sure about that? I don't believe you. You haven't been busy, man, at all.
November was nuts, dude, because we drove from Toronto down to Greensboro and did a two-day show there, then drove to Charlotte, where we had Thanksgiving, but it was mostly helping my folks pack up their place so they could move by the end of the month. And then a two-day drive back to Toronto, where I immediately jumped in to catch up on all of the deadlines that, you know, I couldn't do because I was on the road. And now we're recording Bumblecast, so I'm tired.
I'm real tired. Spaghetti.
You're going to dream ravioli.
Mamma mia.
Cultural insensitivity. Woohoo!
Well, it's Japan. That's what they do.
Yeah, it is.
We still love Japan.
What about you? Now, you, because I was on the road, you took over Bumblecast Gaming Live for like the whole month.
Yeah, just kind of. That was like half the month.
Eh.
Didn't I? I don't know. What did I do? I played Sonic 3D Blast Director's Cut. That's a thing.
Yeah, how does that feel?
It's a much better game. It still has its design flaws because the base design of the game is still kind of flawed. But it's definitely a huge improvement and a lot more playable. So a lot of the changes made are just a lot of quality of life improvements that are like, oh, okay. So now I can actually find flickies when I lose them because there's indicators on the screen that tell you where they are. And the flickies will generally, their AI has been reprogrammed to make it so that generally they will at least try to seek out Sonic instead of just running away in random directions. So, it's a much more, it's a better game. The platforming is still very wonky because you're at kind of an isometric view that is just, isometric views are never conducive to platforming beyond, like, jumping between platforms that are floating in the air and whatever. It's just not easy to do, so.
Flashbacks of Mario RPG.
That's still an issue. But I'd say overall the game is much improved, and it actually is a director's cut, as in the original programmer and one of the founders of Traveler's Tales is the one who actually did the ROM hack and put it together. And this is like his, basically how he's learned to design games between now and then. This is him applying his knowledge of what he knows now to a game that he originally created back in 1995, so.
Which is really super cool. I mean, he didn't have to do that at all.
No. He started
up a labor of love, and it's just magnificent that way.
Right. He started up a YouTube channel, and it kind of exploded, and he was, like, kind of shocked by how many people were interested in, especially, like, Sonic 3D Blast and Sonic R, which he worked on both of those. So he decided to, since he actually still has the original code for Sonic 3D Blast, he decided to delve back into it and, shine it up a little bit, give it some polish, make it a little more palatable. So it's really
cool.
Somebody
get this man the Sonic R original code so he can start adding new characters, because I will play that nonstop.
I think he does have the Sonic R original code. He has all the code for, like, practically everything he ever worked on, so.
Oh, I can feel the sunshine. It's brightening up my day.
He's posted videos of, like, the original version 0.01 alpha of Sonic R, like, going all the way back that far, stuff that's never been seen before. That's, like, it looks weird, and it doesn't make any sense, because obviously it's in very early stages, but it's really cool and really fascinating to look at, nonetheless. So that would be Game Hut is the YouTube channel you're looking for, because, yeah, that's some awesome stuff.
just the way he described how they did the compression of the rendered CG opening on a Genesis cartridge.
Oh, was fascinating. Yeah, he even talked about how they did that Sega logo, because the Sega logo is completely different from any other game's intro for Sonic 3D Blast. Mm. And he talked about the way they did that, and it was really interesting to find the way to see the ways that it tricked a system into rendering something that looked 3D but actually wasn't, in a way that was different from the way like Donkey Kong Country on the Super Nintendo did it and stuff like that. It wasn't pre-rendered, it was just various layered images with transparencies and all that cool stuff that it kind of animated it, and it showed it really well. It was really cool. So I always like seeing how programmers kind of skirted around system limitations back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Everyone's kind of spoiled these days with these powerhouses that we got.
Exactly. Yeah.
Speaking of spoiling people, it's time for the Bumble Raffle.
Oh man, let's give it away. Give it away. Give it away now.
Yes. Yes, we will.
Okay.
Every show we have the Bumble Raffle, where one of our lucky listeners wins a free prize of some sort or another. Now, if you want to enter, all you have to do is write into us at bumblecast@yahoo.com. You need to write in for every episode if you want to draw, unless you are a patron over at patreon.com/bumblecast, in which case you are entered automatically into every single drawing. Everyone has the same chance, it's just those who are not patrons have to enter in for every show.
Yes.
Now, this episode's winner is...
Bradley P.
Congratulations, Bradley. We will be reaching out to you shortly. If we don't, because I've got like 4 or 5 deadlines looming over me, please shoot us an email at bumblecast@yahoo.com and say, give me my prize, and we will send it right away.
Yes. Make us do your bidding. At least as far as this one thing.
Alrighty, so this show, for some reason or another, seems to have something of a Sonic bias. We talk about Sonic a whole lot on the show. I can't really put my finger on why.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't even like Sonic that much.
I mean, I think he's been in 1 or 2 games. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you even care about Sonic all that much, really? I mean, he's not a big deal.
I think the collector's edition of Mania statue is glaring at me from on high at this point. So
it's kind of overdone, you know? He was in a couple of games, and then they decided to keep going with the series, and it's like, come on, what are you doing? Nobody likes you.
That's a lie. We live for him. But to balance things out, we're going to be talking about another prominent mascot character, not quite as up there as Bubsy, but yeah. Equally recognized.
He's no Arrow the Acrobat. That's for dang sure.
We are, of course, talking about the Mario Brothers.
Mario Brothers, to the Mario.
Which, when we were talking about how to approach the topic for this episode, it's like, well, we can't talk about all the games because we don't have a 3-day long show. That our window's a little smaller than that.
Yeah. No, Mario is a very dense topic. You could talk about the cartoons just as an episode on its own. You don't have to delve into the... You could talk about the movie as its own episode. You don't even have to get into anything else. Which, the movie is fascinating, by the way. I actually like the movie. Not as a Mario... It's a poor representation of Mario, but it's a cool representation of a weird world that is... It's kind of like a weird cyberpunky, but in a very stark tone. It looks kind of like the movie looks kind of like a cheap Blade Runner. And I think that's what makes it so fascinating. It's like, that's really weird to put Mario in sort of a Blade Runner-esque universe with a little bit more of a lighthearted feel to it. So I like that aspect of it.
It is certainly a product of its time.
Yes, it is. It is.
I just remember being mad about it because they had Daisy instead of Peach. It's a Mario movie. Why is it Daisy?
I think as Mario Land was the newest game at the time. That's like the only reason I can think of. Also because Peach's name was not established as Peach.
when they made the movie. But the fact that it was Daisy, it's a different character.
I think it's supposed to be Peach, but since they didn't have the name Daisy, they just called her, or they didn't have the name Peach, they just called her Daisy. So it's like, it's Daisy Toadstool. It's like this weird composite character, kind of. Compositely named character.
Wrong!
You're going to say that's wrong? The whole movie is quote-unquote wrong.
Well, I mean, the only accurate thing is the fact that the bomb was wearing Reeboks, but...
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I really love Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo's Mario and Luigi. Because I don't know what it is about both of them as being Mario and Luigi. It's just so... I think it might be because it's so ridiculous it actually works. I don't know why. I don't know why. It's great. And Dennis Hopper as Bowser. It's like, this is almost perfect casting, and yet not at all. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know. The movie is bad. It's not good, and yet it just feels like there was just so much like care and effort put into it despite itself. I don't know. I don't know how else to describe it. Why are we starting talking about the movie?
You're right. Let's get on to our other love within the show, and that's video games.
Yeah.
What was your first Mario game?
The original Super Mario Brothers for the NES. That was my first video game, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That was my introduction to video games, and my parents have regretted it ever since. Okay, my father has, but whatever. Either way, yes, Mario, Super Mario Brothers, my first game in the Mario series, my first video game ever. I still have a soft spot for it. It's not my favorite game in the Mario series, but, you know, it's a classic. There really isn't much I can say about it that no one else has said.
Yeah.
It wasn't even the start of the series, but it's the game that popularized Mario. It's the game that popularized the side-scrolling platformer. It's really just the game that popularized video games in the mainstream.
And pretty much set the standard from which everything else was built off of.
Exactly. Even Sonic was created as a response to Nintendo having a mascot character like Mario.
Right, because Alex Kidd sadly was not cutting the mustard.
Sadly, no.
Man, I would love to see an Alex Kidd revival, but we're not talking about Alex Kidd. We're talking about Mario.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't disagree with you, though. But anyway, yes, go on.
First Mario game that I had for myself was Super Mario Land on the Game Boy.
It's a good game.
It is infuriating.
I suppose. What's wrong with it?
Well, what's wrong with it is that I'm bad at Mario, Kyle.
Okay.
I am, like, stunningly awful at Mario. For the litmus test here.
Sure.
LBD Night Train of Nightworks.org, Google them up, gifted me New Super Mario Brothers on the Wii. Wii U. On the Nintendo console that had the game.
One of those. It's the same game regardless.
You know, it's the four-player, you know, co-op platformer, revived that style of Mario. Very, very forgiving because it's the new style. It's not necessarily old Nintendo hard. Later stuff, sure, but, you know, things have been taken into account for younger, newer players to get into it very easily. I got a game over within the first world. The first world where they throw one-ups at you. The first world where they don't really throw too many challenging things at you. Nothing like, you know, end-game stuff. Legitimately lost all my lives because I am that bad.
For some reason, I find a lot of the levels in the new Super Mario Brothers games to be kind of poorly designed, at least in comparison to the original side-scrolling Mario games. There's just something about them that's just like kind of bland. So I could kind of see how it would be something that you would have trouble with. How about the
older? Offering me an escape route here?
Yes, I am. How about the older games? What, I mean, Mario Land. Mario Land is also a weird one because it was designed by a completely different team. This is kind of like, what would Super Mario Brothers be if? Let's see. I think it's. I can't remember who, which team was which. Because you had Nintendo EAD and Nintendo R&D 1. EAD was, EAD was the Miyamoto side. So EAD was the one who did, they did the original Mario Brothers and Mario 2 and Mario 3. R&D 1 was more the Game Boy side, and they're the ones who did Mario Land and Mario Land 2. And this was, they were like the top developers at Nintendo at the time, both of those. So it was kind of a Super Mario Land was kind of like, okay, what would Super Mario Brothers be like if it were designed by this team instead of the team that did the original game? And it has some really weird differences and changes made to it that are don't quite, it makes it seem just a little bit off kilter. Like the building blocks of the game, of both games, are the same, but the once you start getting deeper into it, things get a little weird. Like the turtle shells that you stomp on and then they turn into bombs and explode. Or when you, or the fire flower that instead of giving you a fireball, gives you a weird bouncy ball that kind of just, once it hits the ground, then goes off on its own and bounces off things if there's anything in its way. It's weird. It's a very off-kilter, strange game. Just, it's Super Mario, but it's tweaked in a slightly to the left or to the right. It's tweaked in a slightly in a different direction where it's like you're just, it's weird. You're not expecting it.
I just remember I beat Mario Land legitimately all the way through once, maybe twice. I just remember the tension headache I had finishing it the first time. Because I was in the zone, man. I managed to get through and then get to the final boss. And it's like, if I die here, I've got to start from scratch. Oh, God. Oh, God. Shoot the Tonka. Shoot the Tonka.
It's not a very long game either, which is
it feels like it was.
It feels forever. Yeah. Yeah.
And then somebody blew my mind in high school when they had one of their graphing calculators running Mario Land.
Oh, really?
Like, they had a perfect reprediction.
They had, did they have an emulator on their graphing calculator? That's a bit more in-depth than I ever went with any graphing calculator. That's cool. That's pretty cool. Dang.
Like, I don't know if it was an emulator. I think it might have just been, I don't know how they would have programmed it in there. But yeah, instead of learning what sine, cosine, and all that was, we played Mario Land.
Well, that's a much better use of a graphing calculator than it's than its quote-unquote intended purpose. I'm pretty sure its intended purpose is to actually play Mario Land, but they don't advertise that, so.
Possibly because the sound card is just garbage on that thing. But anyway.
Of course. I don't know. Was there even sound on it?
No. That's the joke.
Okay. You confused me for a second. I'm like, okay.
The major Mario game for my family was Mario 64.
That is a major game for Mario in general, really. So, yeah.
Sure. But it was the first Nintendo console we had in our home.
Oh, really?
Not counting the Game Boy, because that's the portable. But it was the first plug-it-into-the-wall console. And it took me, my father, and my brother a year, all cooperative, to get all the stars, I think.
Oh, yeah?
It took me a long time. And then my baby brother deleted the file.
Oh, man, your baby brother's the worst.
But he's a gamer now, so yeah. He was young. He didn't know.
He didn't know what
the other brother deleted my complete file in Sonic 3 and Knuckles too. So it seems to be my curse.
Oh, man, I'm glad I didn't have any brothers. I could delete my save games left and right.
What about you? How deep have you gone down the warp pipe?
It might be, I don't know. I played a lot of Mario games. I've played almost all the mainline ones. Odyssey is like the only one I haven't really played yet. Let's see. I'm trying to think of some of the more obscure ones. Like even Japanese Super Mario Brothers 2, I've beaten that one, which is...
and too I did, hard for American audiences.
I did it on Mario All Stars, where they made it easier, and you didn't have to beat the game multiple times to get to World 9. And even still, it's very it's Super Mario Brothers for super players, which is that's accurate. It's tough. It's a really tough game, but it's fun. So there is that. Like I've played like Alleyway just because it has Mario in it. Alleyway, it's an Arkanoid ripoff with no power ups. It's Breakout with Mario in it. I've played that. It's like Wrecking Crew. It's a Mario. It's not even really a Mario game. It's got Mario in it, or the pinball, just NES pinball. It's just called pinball. There's a side bonus game with Mario in it, and it's like I've played that. I've played Donkey Kong Jr. I've played Donkey Kong 3, which doesn't have Mario in it. It's ridiculous. I've played all of these games. Why have I done this with what have I done with my life?
You've done the Mario.
Oh yeah. You're right.
Now here's a major debate point amongst Mario fans. Let's see where you weigh in.
Sure.
Mario Sunshine.
Not bad.
Is it the unsung genius, or is it the one notable bad mainline game?
Neither. To be honest with you. I like it.
You middle of the roader.
No. I think Mario Sunshine looks great. I like Flood. I like the concept of Flood. Some of the level design is a little wonky, and as a follow-up to Mario 64, I don't think it's what people were expecting and hoping for. But as a game on its own, I think it's fine. I don't have any particular problem with it. It looks good. It plays like Mario. They took out the long jump, I think, which made me annoyed, but that's just me. Running out of water is really annoying. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what else. I haven't beaten it, but I also haven't beaten Mario Galaxy and a few other Mario games that I just haven't beaten. Not because I don't like them, just because as I've gotten older, my desire to go through an entire game has has diminished. But well, I don't really.
Galaxy is just absolutely monstrous.
Well, true, but so is Sunshine. Sunshine's really freaking long, but I don't have a problem with it. What about you? Have you played it?
Not extensively, because I really didn't like it myself.
Oh, yeah?
Now, you're right. It is absolutely gorgeous, and it's aged very well, all things considered.
Mm-hmm.
But the water mechanic really got on my nerves, because not only... if you're a bad Mario player, cough, cough, the Flood becomes something of a crutch because there's a lot of that hover ability trying to overcorrect. But at the same time, if you do something wrong, and there are puzzles that require you to use a specific amount of water the right way, if you mess it up, that's it. You can't fudge it. You can't find your way around it. It's all or nothing. And I felt like some of that wasn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't fall on the player, it fell on the mechanic.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. I'd say some of the levels, some of the puzzles are not very well designed. There's the pachinko machine.
The notorious pachinko machine.
That is obviously a nightmare and a half. That's just like, yeah. There's also the, what is it, like a sand bird or something that you fly around on, that's like the only solid ground in the level, and it's flying around in the sky and you're just trying to stay on it, and it's like completely miserable. Yeah, there's a few different levels that are not the greatest. So, but I think overall the game, it's a weaker entry for sure, but it's not like completely awful.
No, it's a Mario game, so it has a degree of polish and precision that most games only dream of.
Right.
And I can critique Mario Sunshine all I want from my biased stance anyway, but even still, it is far beyond so many other platformers that when it makes a misstep, you take note of it because, huh, that's odd for a Mario game to come up short in some regard.
Sure, sure. And I think that's kind of, I guess my stance on it would be like, in comparison to other Mario games, not so great. In comparison to a lot of other platforming games, it's a freaking masterpiece. So
that, yeah. And the music. I don't know. I really didn't enjoy the music in Sunshine.
I love the music in Sunshine. I guess that's just a stylistic preference, I suppose. But I do enjoy that, even though it is completely and totally synthesized fake. I do like the Super Mario Brothers a cappella remix in the bonus levels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm a sucker for a cappella.
The non-flat a cappella. Yeah, it's very clearly using a sample, sample voices instead of real voices, but it's still fun. And I do like the very island tropical feel of the music overall. That's very actually kind of Mario 1-ish, because the original Mario theme is kind of has an interesting tropical vibe to it. I think that was the original inspiration. Koji Kondo's original inspiration was like, yeah, it's weird because it's not in any sort of like, it's not in the time signature is not like a standard 4/4 or something. It's some really odd time signature that's more of like a tropical thing rather than what you hear in standard music. So standard pop music and stuff. So it's weird, but.
Now, to form a baseline here for comparison, I love the soundtrack to Mario 64.
Yes.
And Galaxy is just transcendent in some places.
Right. I think between Mario 64 and Mario Galaxy and Sunshine, those three, Sunshine is the weakest, music-wise.
Now, how much of Odyssey have you seen? I know you haven't had a chance to play it. But you watched any playthroughs or live streams or anything like that?
Yeah, I've seen a pretty decent chunk of the early game at least. Have you watched any of it?
I've watched, I would probably say, at least 50% of the game content.
Okay, a little bit more than
a fair chunk of most of the worlds at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's absolutely gorgeous.
It is.
There's a lot of fun ideas in there. And I just feel like the music is lackluster in comparison, especially to Galaxy.
Really?
There's nothing inherently wrong with it, but I feel like a lot of the music is forgettable, which is really weird for a Mario game.
I kind of hear you on that one. There's one song that I really like, though, that I can't even remember like where it's played. It's some like acoustic guitar-driven thing. And I think it's in either the Forest Kingdom or the Desert Kingdom, but I think it's the Desert Kingdom. There's a song in there that I really like, but I can't even like hum it to you or sing it to you off the top of my head because I can't remember it. So you might be right on that. But I think a lot of the music love for that game comes down to Jump Up Superstar, Pauline's song.
Oh, sure. That one's fantastic.
Which is great, yeah.
And I felt really dumb because after listening to it multiple times, I finally picked up on the callback to Donkey Kong.
Oh, yeah.
That's worked into the baseline. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I've cracked the code.
Yeah, the bridge goes dum, 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 dum. Yeah, it's great.
And I love it because it's a callback that doesn't, you know, get all in your face and hey, nostalgia, hey, you remember this? It's just a natural part of the song, and then when you
Yeah. It's even varied though. It's not exactly the same. There's a variation because I think it's like dum dum da 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 dum. I forget how it goes. I forget how the variation part goes, but it has
some extra added.
But yeah, if you know what you're listening for, or at least you know Donkey Kong well enough to recognize that bass line, you'll know it. So, but it's not in your face, you're right. So, and I definitely enjoy that.
And before we go too long on the topic, let's switch gears real quick. of the three RPG series, Superstar, Paper, and Mario & Luigi, what's your top pick?
I have something to admit. Of the Mario games that I have played, these series are, like, my least played.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they're RPGs, and you know me and my relationship with RPGs.
I suppose.
Very, very limited. I have seen the stream of Paper Mario: A Thousand Year Door, and I enjoyed that. I like a lot of the characters in there. I would have played it if I had just played it, if I had ever owned it or anything. I don't know. There's just something.
In my humble opinion,
I played the original Mario RPG. Is that the thing? I've actually played that one. I've played quite a bit of that one, actually. I enjoyed it. I don't know if it's aged super gracefully, but
I don't know. It was such a weird game anyway.
It is.
I think any parts of it that haven't aged as well stem more from the style of RPGs from that era.
Yeah.
Not so much the game itself. It's like we were saying earlier, it has a lot of isometric platforming, which is a bit of a bear.
Yeah, but, and it's also designed by Square, so it's a different team.
Right.
So it's not really, it has some interesting, strange design philosophies that I don't think Nintendo themselves would have necessarily delved into.
But I think that's what gives it so much charm, is that right. It feels like a Final Fantasy game, but it also kind of feels like a Mario game. It's that weird fusion of the two.
Yeah.
And the soundtrack is fantastic, and mm-hmm. the special attacks are really satisfying to pull off. The writing is really goofy. I don't know, it's just a really charming game, and if you can get past some of the more archaic game design elements to it, I think it's still a lot of fun.
Oh, sure. There's a reason why it's on the SNES mini classic thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's still a good game. It still holds up, I think. I just don't know how well it holds up.
Of the Paper Mario series, I would say, if you're going to play any of them, do Thousand Year Door.
Thousand Year Door, the playthrough I've watched of it was really entertaining, so yeah.
I mean, it gets hyped a lot, but
oh, yeah.
I think a lot of that hype is earned. Paper Mario, the original, does a lot of neat new things,
mm-hmm.
and it proved the concept, because when it was first announced, everyone was like, oh, why is it not, you know, a true successor to Mario RPG? What's with this paper motif? Why is he 2D in a 3D world? This makes no sense. Wah, 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 wah. And then you play it, and it's like, oh, wow, this is tons of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Thousand Year Door is the perfect sequel in that it takes everything good about Paper Mario, trims, haha, the not-so-perfect parts, and just expounds upon everything that made it great.
Mm-hmm.
Super Paper Mario had a lot of neat ideas, but I feel like it doesn't have the same level of fun or charm the Thousand Year Door did. And I've not played the two after that just because they seem to be going further and further away from what Thousand Year Door had going for it.
I've not heard great things about the two after Super Paper Mario. I've not even heard great things about Super Paper Mario, to be honest. I think I own it, and I have not, but I haven't played. I haven't even played it.
There are some laugh out loud parts mm-hmm. here and there. And the whole swapping between the 2D and 3D perspective, they have some really good puzzles based around that where I couldn't figure out how to get on. And I'm like, oh, wait, der, swap it. Okay, stupid, the main mechanic. Yeah, sure, use that.
But, yeah.
it's worth a playthrough, I guess, but it didn't grab me as much as Thousand Year Door did.
Sure.
As for the other one, I've only played Mario & Luigi Superstar Saga, the first one, the original version, and I got as far as the final boss, and holy crap, I was not ready for the difficulty spike there. Because, whew, they do not take it easy on you. It's not like it's a cheap, hard boss. It's just, it's a very strong final boss, and you don't really have a lot of options going back to prepare for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the sprite work in the original game is stunning, and the whole idea of having, you know, Mario and Luigi controlled by separate buttons, and then the combo attacks are based around your timing of those, can lead to some really cool combos or some hilarious mistakes. Like, there's one in particular where Luigi will take a mallet. No, excuse me. Mario takes a mallet, hits Luigi over the head, and reduces him down to a croquet ball, and then golf swings him into the enemy. And that's three timed hits. Mm-hmm. If you mistime the hit, Mario rears back with the hammer, the head falls off, he whaps Luigi right across the Luigi goes, ay, 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 and jumps forward in pain, bouncing off the enemy.
Nice.
There's a fireball move for Mario and a lightning strike move for Luigi, where you can charge up either one to do another kind of rush attack. And if you screw it up, you set them on fire or give them a static shock, and they stop for a second to yell at each other while the fight's going on. It's a funny, funny game.
I should just sit down and play Mario. I think Mario and Luigi of the RPG series, Mario and Luigi is probably the one that looks the most. That's the one I'd want to play the most. I don't know why. It's just the look of it and everything. I think that's the one that appeals to me the most. So, and that's the one where they really kind of expand Luigi's character, right?
Mm-hmm. He has so many stellar moments in that.
Yeah,
game.
I think that's part of the reason why too. And that's, I don't know. I just like Luigi. He's got so much more character than Mario. He's less boring. Granted, he's no Wario or Waluigi practically ooze character who are just glorious. But you know, he's still a pretty charismatic character.
Well, then I think you would enjoy the Superstar Saga because Mario is kind of the straight man of the two, but you get so much interaction between him and Luigi, he gets more characterization as well. So
okay, that's good. That's good.
All right, we could be doing this for like another three episodes, so let's move on to the ad for the show.
Indeed.
Our good friend Daniel H. has come to us again, and he would like us to say this time around, with the cold and the holidays upon us, there are sadly a number of people who will not have the comforts of warmth, food, or fellowship. Thankfully, there's something we can do. The Bowery Mission of New York has a number of programs available to those in need, from shelter to meals to medical care and so much more. The Bowery has been aiding the less fortunate since 1879, and with our help, it can continue to do so. Please check out their website to learn more, and he thanks you for your time, because he's just a stand-up guy like that. Check them out at www.bowery.org.
All right. And with that, let's get into some Q&A. And don't forget, you can ask your questions via email at bumblecast@yahoo.com. On Twitter, either at IanFlynnBKC or at KyleJCRB using the hashtag Bumblecast, or via Patreon comments or private messages. Either one will get you seen there. So last episode, you might have noticed we didn't get the chance to get any priority Q&A in, so we're doing a supersized priority Q&A on this episode, as in we have four questions instead of three.
that was entirely my fault, guys. We had to record early.
No, it's nobody's fault. It's just scheduling. It's just scheduling issues. It's not a big deal, Ian. We're making it up to the people now.
It's fine.
They understand, I hope. Anyway, this one comes from Daniel H. Post-Thanksgiving feast, what would Mr. Flynn and Mr. Krause's ideal Thanksgiving meal consist of?
Oh, I've been talking all day. You go first.
I do love Mexican food. Is that like...
For Thanksgiving?
is this like the ideal... We've talked about before, like, what food, normal Thanksgiving food we like. I'm thinking of, like, strange Thanksgiving foods you don't normally have. That's kind of what my
thought. You've added an esoteric air to this question that I had not anticipated.
Yeah, I don't know. Do you want me to do, like, a traditional one? Because my traditional one would be, like, freaking turkey, dude. Like,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah, but, you know, I guess the question is, what is the ideal Thanksgiving dinner? Is it the traditional food done well with family, or is it... What would be great to pig out on that day because you get away with it because it's Thanksgiving?
I do like the classic Thanksgiving meal. I mean, I'm not going to lie.
Could you find a ground and do turkey tacos?
Turkey tacos? Sure, we could do that. I'm also just thinking, like, my mom makes these really freaking ridiculously awesome mashed potatoes that have like cream, not cream cheese. Yeah, cream cheese in them, and they have
Good
like it's just
God.
covered in butter, and it's like ridiculous. It's horrible for you, but they taste delicious. Those are good. I also like the my girlfriend, she's made these really freaking good sweet potato casserole that has basically just has everything mixed into it instead of just on top. So you have like the brown sugar and everything all mixed into it, so it's like really sweet and tastes really good with every bite, instead of just being like, oh, you get the sweetness on the top, and then what's left over is just sweet potato, which is fine. I like sweet potato, but it's, come on, I need a little more. I don't know. Those are good. I like those. What about you, Ian?
See, I'm hung up on this idea now of turkey stuffing, mashed potatoes, and a bit of gravy wrapped in a warm, soft tortilla. It's like, that might be pretty
A
tasty.
Thanksgiving burrito. I don't, I'm
Yeah, I
down.
think you might be onto something here, buddy.
I'm down with that. I meant like traditional Mexican food, but even then, if you want to combine the two, heck, I'm down.
Me, I'm all for the traditional bird and starches.
Oh,
Give me a
yeah.
nice juicy turkey, layer on the mashed potatoes and the stuffing. Give me some green stuff on the side so I don't feel entirely gluttonous.
Yeah, but then cover it in cheese, so that makes it better.
Nah, that's a bit cheesy. I'm not really a big gravy guy, truth be told.
No, well, I mean, like cheese sauce on your green beans. You know,
Nah,
you gotta have that.
nah, nah.
No? Okay, fine.
This year, my mom did a new casserole recipe that was like broccoli kale with a Ritz cracker crust, which
Ugh.
sounds bizarre, but it actually turned out pretty tasty.
I'd try it, but I really don't care for kale or broccoli.
I'm not a big fan of them either, but they came out in just a way that was kind of crunchy and an interesting mix of flavors. So, you have that with a bite of everything else, it's like, huh, that ain't half
I do
bad.
like
Especially
Ritz.
for something so healthy.
I like Ritz crackers. Ritz crackers aren't that healthy. Come on.
Maybe that's why it tasted so good.
Yeah, maybe that might have helped. But Ritz crackers are delicious.
They are, and oh man, you get them with some smoked salmon.
I wish I could have more smoked salmon than I can have. Being allergic to things kind of sucks. I can have a little, but if my throat starts to hurt really bad if I have too much, it sucks. Anyway, let's move on to our next question from Chris A. What is your favorite show to watch when you were a kid? I would say
Oh, shoot.
what was your favorite show? That might be a little more accurate, but eh.
One?
True.
Are we gonna have to narrow it down to like individual years?
Let's see. Sat AM, Adventures of Sonic. I actually never watched Sonic Underground when it was new. I didn't realize it existed. what else? Sonic X. No, I never actually watched that much when I don't think I was even. How old was I when Sonic X was a thing? I think I was in high school. So I didn't watch Sonic X. Super Mario Brothers Super Show, that's a good one. Well, okay, maybe not a good one, but it's a show. The Zelda cartoon, also not a great one, but you know. Animaniacs, Tiny Toons, the Earthworm Jim cartoon, which actually I think is still pretty funny, holds up surprisingly well in the joke department. Yeah, what about you, Ian?
I remember I was an avid fan of Silverhawks and Thundercats. I remember wanting to watch a lot of He-Man, but I didn't retain any of it. Like Silverhawks, I remember. Thundercats, I kind of remember. He-Man, for some reason, maybe I didn't watch as much as I thought. Ninja Turtles growing up, of course. The Sonic cartoons, that's kind of a given.
Right.
There was this weird show that was called like Saturday Morning Comic Strip or something that was a bunch of different cartoons all in one block. And there was a Thundercats / Silverhawk knockoff by the same production company where they turned into marine animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it distinctly because it was so out of theme with everything else in that block, and there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason what was shown within the half hour. And, you know, I would make a point of watching it, and it's like, oh, they did the two cartoons that I don't want to watch. Well, where's my whatever it was? I can't even remember the name of the show.
Yeah. DuckTales. That's another good one.
Yeah, DuckTales. Pretty much the entire Disney Saturday morning lineup. Gargoyles.
Oh, yeah.
Was amazing.
The Chippendale Rescue Rangers. What about non-animated shows? We always seem to go to animated shows. Did you have any live-action shows you ever watched?
No, because who wants to watch real people? You see those every day.
I know.
I did watch Star Trek Next Generation on Deep Space Nine with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And we suffered through Voyager together.
I watched Home Improvement as a family
thing. Oh, yeah!
Home Improvement every week. A show that has not aged super well, but is still entertaining, I think.
The best segments are always when they had the super masculinized kitchens or garages or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly because I just wanted to play with the sets, because those looked like
fun. Yeah, I do like those. I don't know. I don't know. That show hasn't held up super well, but I still like it. Trying to think what else did we kind of watch as a kid. You never watched like Saved by the Bell or anything, did you?
Nope.
I think I watched it a little bit, but I never got into it
super deep.
But I know it was on, so I would watch it sometimes. That's the thing about TV back in the day. You just kind of watch things just because they were there.
Power Rangers, dude.
Oh, yeah. I never got into Power Rangers quite as much as I did Beetleborgs. I was that kid. And looking back,
I think I just gave you the 1,000-yard stare through the mic.
Looking back on it, Beetleborgs is way worse than Power Rangers. And Power Rangers isn't even that great. Power Rangers isn't even that great, but yeah.
It has not aged well in some regards.
Beetleborgs has not aged well at all in practically any regard. So we'll just say that. I still have a soft spot for it, but it's like, wow, it's like, it has not held up at all. But I enjoyed it at the time. What else? It's like VR Troopers, also a show that has not held up well at all.
Mm-hmm.
But that theme song.
I don't remember.
VR. We are VR Trooper. I don't know. It's not nearly as good as Power Rangers theme song.
No, that thing.
For some reason, the music of Power Rangers is ridiculously good. Like, Ron Wasserman, the composer, is just like, he knew how to do, like, it almost reminds me of, like, Sonic Adventure and Sonic Adventure 2 stuff, because it's just like, it's so exciting, it gets you so pumped up, it gets you ready.
I can see that.
It's very, like, very 80s-esque. Very much in that vein of, like, yeah, time to kick some butt.
Time to fight some putties.
Yeah. It's got that kind of like Transformers the movie vibe to it musically, which, by the way, if you've not seen Transformers the movie, the 86 movie recently, Ian, you need to watch that. It's like I
saw it a few years ago. It's something.
I was like, this is dude. It's freaking great. I loved it. I loved watching it again just recently. It was like, is this really, like, it's like a concept album in movie form. It's a freaking, like, music video masterpiece.
I haven't looked at it that way.
That's really the only thing I could think of when I was watching it, because every single second there is a new song. Or there is a song, and it's like every scene and every fight and every bit has music going on. There isn't a time when it's not playing music, and it's like one, like, hour 20, hour 30 music video with a lot of action, some cheesy story and dialogue here and there, but it's mostly like a freaking music video. It's an 80s animated music video with giant robots fighting, and what is better than that?
Yeah, I might have to rewatch it with that mindset.
Yeah.
Because that's going to change the perspective for me entirely.
Yeah, it's a freaking music video. You just, that's all, that's what you really need to treat it as. It's just like a concept album music video. And it's great. All right, let's go on to the next question, shall we? It's from Sam Cybercat. I thought all of your secret projects had been revealed recently, but I see that there's still three listed in the video game section on Bumble King. Does this mean that there's more to come?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Hashtag knowing smile.
Hashtag knowing smile. There's even some secret projects that I haven't even teased because there's no way that I can tease it without pretty much tipping my hand. So, yeah, I've got a number of things on the back burner that are in development. Thank you, Sam, for actually checking out my website.
What? So,
Kyle, there's a lot of folks who don't know that it exists. I get this a lot.
Who goes to the website these days? Yeah, I know. Websites are like, it's so web 1.0. Nobody goes to the websites anymore. They only go to Facebook and Twitter.
But, yeah, I've got stuff cooking up, and as soon as I can talk about it publicly, you better believe I'll be doing so.
Yes. All right. And our last priority question comes from Mike B. I assume that you tried to make the comics into sort of your own canon without stomping on Sega's canon. Like, you don't take the whole Sonic characters breathing in space thing as something that should be true to the comics canon or characters.
With any Sonic comic that I'm involved with, I definitely put my own spin on it, but I obey the rules that are set by the canon. So, as weird as it is that Sonic and his friends breathe in space, I don't know, that's just what they do.
Maybe they don't breathe at all. We've never established they even have lungs, have we?
Well, considering how much Sonic drowns, yes.
Oh, yeah. Never mind. I sound really stupid now.
But, I mean, early on when I was getting into the franchise, I wanted to explain away everything. I wanted to make sense of each little bit of nuance, and any discrepancy needed to be addressed. And the more that I've worked with it, the more that I've realized that, no, you don't. Sonic is fast. Why? Because he's fast. It doesn't need a mystical or sci-fi explanation. That's just who he is. And I understand folks who want to have a more robust insight into the world and its rules, and that's certainly something that needs to be addressed when you are tackling any kind of story. But at the same time, part of the enjoyment is just what you're given. The Chaos Emeralds have limitless power, but they can be drained. They have positive or negative energy. They turn Sonic super, but nobody else. Why? I don't know. It's just what they do. And that's, that's the rules of the world, and so we play with them.
Right.
We can't use a particular character because they were killed off in the games, and Sega wants it to stay that way, okay, they're dead. We don't use them. There's tons of other stuff that we can do.
Sure.
Depending on where we go with the IDW book, which I'm not spoiling anything, but, I'm taking the games as the basis. But at the same time, I don't have to be 100% beholden to this is exactly how it is, because even the games themselves don't perfectly sync up in every respect. So
more often than not, they don't.
So when you get down to it, just relax and enjoy the ride, because the ride never ends.
It's just a show, game, comic book, etc. You should really just relax. I keep saying that, but it's true. Anyway, I'm okay with Sonic breathing in space. It's fine. There's air there. It's fine. We don't have to worry about it.
I mean, for all the times that he's been in space, say that, wherever he was, there was some localized atmosphere,
Sure. Maybe he just...
Maybe the Death Egg was venting enough oxygen because it's like that. When they're in the Ark, maybe it's so big, maybe it's got enough of a... It's got gravity. Might as well have some atmosphere around it.
I'm kind of thinking like... I wonder if the bubble shield would work in space. It might.
Now we're getting into real physics and
Well, the bubble shield isn't real physics to begin with, so we can just ignore that. Anyway, all right, let's get into the standard Q&A. This one comes from Stepper of the Long Earth. What's both of your thoughts on A Hat in Time and Super Mario Odyssey? I think we've talked about Super Mario Odyssey a bit on this show, so what do you think about Hat in Time, Ian?
I have not seen or played any of it, and I need to rectify that.
I have seen it and not played it, and it looks gorgeous, and I love it, and I want to play it, but I have not had the chance to. So, but it's adorable. It's freaking cute. It's great Mario, or it's a great N64/GameCube-esque platformer that looks like a ton of fun, and I want to play it. So that's my thought on it right now. I've been watching it for a long time. I was wondering if it was ever even going to come out. It's been in development for so long, but I'm really glad it's out there and that it's as good of a game as it is. So that makes me happy. All right. Next one comes from Marissa N. It's a bit of a long one here. I know you didn't have much to do with the Sonic and Mega Man Worlds Unite arc.
We'll come back to that.
But there's a small continuity issue I noticed, being Mega Man getting roboticized. It's been established in some of the earlier Sonic comics, namely using the Princess Sally miniseries for this example, that you can't roboticize a robot. Sonic becoming a robot makes sense, it's happened before, but Mega Man already being a robot just messes with me a bit. If Dr. Wily and Eggman had deactivated Mega Man and then reprogrammed him, I wouldn't complain. I'm not angry, I just wanted to point it out.
Okay, well, number one, I was deeply involved with that crossover and that I wrote all of it.
I was going to say, you wrote it. You were the mastermind of the whole thing. But
and two parts of the battle spinoff side story, so
yeah.
I was about as involved as you can get with that.
It was your story.
Maybe she misworded it?
I'm not certain exactly there. I think she, I don't know. I don't know.
Anyway,
it's all good.
You're right, except you're not. And here's where the continuity gets messy, and I hate it. The whole you can't roboticize a robot thing was from the pre-reboot continuity.
Yes.
And it was part of the plot point in Eggman's big scheme around the 230s. Post-reboot, that was off the table.
Right.
Number two, the process that Dr. Eggman and Dr. Wily used on Sonic and Mega Man was not pure robotization. It was a special trans-dimensional funky thing to turn them into the roboticized masters. I realize calling them roboticized masters and saying it's not robotization is really kind of stupid, and in retrospect I probably should have addressed that better, but different continuity, different rules, and different process.
Right.
Mostly it was just there to explain why Sonic and Mega Man were the same level of evil robot.
Yeah, I that never really struck me as a problem. I think mostly because it's like, well, that was so long ago, completely different writer, completely different continuity, that I just never even processed it as being like, wait, how can you roboticize a robot? And then my thought also was like, okay, well, maybe Mega Man is because he's from a completely different universe. He has a completely different physiology or robotology, whatever you want to call it. He has a completely different design. So roboticization process of a robot from the Mega Man universe would be different than from the Sonic universe. That's my thought on it.
I mean, that works, but I feel like that's a bit too convoluted for what's supposed to be a fun crossover. You know?
Right, right. I mean, that was just my way of rationalizing my head. It wouldn't have to necessarily be like, that's not how it actually worked or anything. That's just kind of my thought about it.
We already pulled the whole Wily reprograms Mega Man in the third arc of the book, and the idea of Wily capturing, reprogramming, and remodeling Mega Man already happens in Quint. So the whole roboticized master angle for Mega Man in that crossover was special, so we weren't just retreading what Mega Man has already done.
Yeah, I was going to say, capturing and reprogramming Mega Man is like one of the things that constantly happens. Don't need it to happen again, do we?
At first you don't succeed, try again.
Keep doing the same thing over and over. Eventually it'll work out. Wily, you idiot. That's the problem with both Wily and Eggman. They keep trying the same things over and over, and it's never working. It's like...
Now, Eggman actually got the whole controlled giant Eldritch terror thing down.
Eggman, I think, is actually is a lot more competent than Dr. Wily.
I mean, granted, his first two attempts drowned a city and nearly got all of space-time erased, but...
I don't think
he totally had a handle on the Time Eaters. So.
I don't think he cares. I think he just wanted to be... I don't know. I think Eggman's actually succeeded, and Dr. Wily, I don't think, ever actually has. I think that's the difference between the two of them, really.
I think you could make a case for either, or I think Eggman's had longer lasting success.
Yeah.
Whereas Wily has had more temporary success. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you could also argue that Wily's efforts have an almost immediate and meteoric rise to the peak and then a rapid fall off, whereas Eggman takes more time to get to a point and then drops off.
Sure. I could see that. All right. And our final question on this episode comes from none other than Sonic Blue Ranger. How is writing for the TMNT universe different than writing for the younger aimed Amazing Adventures? Also, did you need to read through the previous output to get a grasp on the continuity? He's talking about the IDW TMNT universe and TMNT Amazing Adventures comics, yep, for clarification.
Night and day, because with Amazing Adventures, they were, you know, not really fitting into the continuity of the cartoon. They were inspired by and just goofy stories.
Mm-hmm.
Now, me being me, I put in little continents to the main story I did because that's what I do. I'm just a hyper nerd that likes to do that. But mostly the stories were fun fluff that, you know, just entertaining to pick up and put down. For the two issues that I'm doing in Universe, those are much deeper steeped in the lore that's been established and actually puts a couple of things into motion that will become canon later on. So I definitely binged on everything TMNT, and that was a lot of turtles all in one go. But I wanted to make sure that whatever I created fit within the universe and my contributions added to it in a meaningful way. So it's a easy enough to grasp story on its own, but it will have greater implications to the TMNT universe. Not just the title, but the whole kit and caboodle.
Mm-hmm. So, TMNT Universe, did you go through and read previous arcs, or...
Everything.
You read all that? Okay.
Every annual, every spinoff mini, the main book, Universe itself. I need to get caught up on the last few months' worth of stuff, but, yeah, everything that would lead up and affect my story. Oh, yeah, I read a lot of terms.
No, that's dedication.
Now, if you haven't been reading Turtles, definitely pick it up. It's a fun read. The last major event that has been completed was the trial of Krang, which had a very unexpected ending that literally got a verbal response from me as I was reading it. I was like, oh, God! So, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Alrighty. Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Bumblecast Q&A and this edition of the Bumblecast. Anything else we need to get out of the way, Ian?
Yes, we've got to give a big thank you to all the patrons who make this show possible.
Yes.
And I'm going to continue my quest to read them all, which is going to be interesting because we've had more additions to the list. So,
yes.
3, 2, 1. Big thank you to Daniel H, Alex P, Zephyr Flame, Chris A, Damo, John B, Sam Cybercat, Mike B, Connell T, Samuel P, Justin G, Jennifer R, David C, Revan the Light, Diane W, Lisa M, Ron DMC, Silly String, Today's Passenger, Artenton D, M, Scruffy Matt, Lee H, James G, Chevelle, Don B, Sin Fritz, Page wouldn't scroll fast enough. AE Double, Taco Elgato Comics, John M, Eschavarovich 9X, James K, Bradley P, congratulations again, Overthinking Films, Adam T, and Ron.
And Ron. I like how it ends with Ron. We I don't
know
why.
Satisfying.
I don't know why. Yes, there's something. There's just something very succinct about that name of being like, and Ron. Yeah, it's like, yeah, Ron.
Kyle, where can people find you after the show is done?
After the show is done? Well, geez, I don't know. I'm probably going back to bed.
Online, you goober.
You can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB or over at KNGI.org, where you can find archived episodes of the Bumblecast, along with my other show, Nitro Game Injection, which is a video game music remix show focusing on fan-made remixes of various games. Streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time over on 8bitx.com. What about you, Ian?
If you want to be a cool person like Sam Cybercat, you can check out everything I've got going on at bumbleking.com or find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC. You can also catch me and Kyle with our gaming channel. That's twitch.tv/bumblecastgaming, or check out the YouTube channel for all archived stuff. We do Bumblecast Gaming live nightly on Friday for patrons, and we stream irregularly whenever we have time for everybody else.
Indeed we do. Don't forget to also check out our Bumble store at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore, where you can get a Bumble shirt or a Bumble something. You can get a Bumble Focus sticker, maybe, probably. You can probably get like a Bumble decal, a Bumble...
Adorn your brow with a Bumble cap.
A Bumble door handle thingamajigger that hangs on the door. I don't know. A Bumble poster. Can you get a poster there? You probably can.
Head over to the shop and find out for yourself.
Yes, indeed. Go shop yourself. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. Bumble Christmas? What happens on Bumble Christmas, Ian?
Same thing as it happens on Christmas.
Oh, is it even the same day?
Yes, just for convenience sake.
Okay, that makes sense. Maybe you can get some Bumble wrapping paper. I don't think they actually have that there.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode 58. We will see you Christmas morning for the next episode and every Friday for Bumblecast Gaming. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.
You can also catch me and Kyle on Take 2.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com. Available as a pay what you want download. Oh? What is up, dog?
Oh, I just did a recording of a show.
Oh, okay. Wow, Discord sounds like holy crap.
Yeah, good lord. You forget what the difference is.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize just how bad Skype sounded compared to Discord. Holy crap. Oh, man.